look who's here. I mean, I can't believe it. I cannot believe you agreed to do this. I'm just so grateful.
Of course
Thank
I
you
did.
For being here. Thank you for being here. Everybody, look at all these
Good
comments.
Being here.
Oh,
all
my
right,
God.
Cause, cool.
Cause I told everybody on Thursday and Friday, I got the best special guest like ever coming on Monday morning. Look at what everybody's saying. It's just great. That's
right.
So awesome.
Okay. Yeah. Hopefully it'll stay like that. Okay.
And we both look so tired.
It's just early here. It takes me a while to get up.
Oh, well, it's early.
I'm on the first cup of coffee.
Yeah, I get it. Believe me, I get it. So I get it. Hey, did you by any chance watch any of the International Call to Prayer this weekend? Did you watch it on Friday and Saturday?
I did not. I did not. No.
You may want to, it's like asking somebody to read War and Peace, you know, but if you get a chance to pop out to YouTube and watch some of those, it was really powerful. Really, I just said to the people here that the black pastor who prayed for Africa, I mean, even now, just thinking about it, I mean, it was, he just pleaded to God to please save Africa from the bad. And it was like, I don't know, less than 3 minutes maybe. But he just said, you know, save them from the wars and from the bad leadership, and I would say from all the experimentation of the vaccines that go on in Africa. You know, it was just really powerful. So, and I also went to a little Trump rally here in Cleveland over the weekend. So,
cool.
But that it was, I didn't realize it was 2 days. It was Thursday. It was Friday and Saturday.
Wow.
And if you went to their site. Their website, I think I'll get the name of it here in a second, but they had live streaming set up like in countries all over the world.
Wow, neat.
All
right,
over the world.
That's great.
They had probably 10,000 people around the mall in Washington, D.C., people that were there just, and the only reason they were there was to pray for our country, to pray for our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our leadership. It wasn't partisan. It was pray for, you know, the right leaders would come into being. So it was pretty amazing.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, we need prayer right now around this world. We definitely need it. Divine intervention and open minds. We need our minds opened up so that people can really start seeing clearly themselves and making better decisions.
Right. So what's going on in your world, Del? What did you do over the weekend?
That's well, I mean, the weekend, actually, I got to go to some baseball games. My kid was playing baseball and daughter was playing soccer. And so I, you know, got some family time in. We had a nice evening the other night. Mickey Willis and some friends came over and we were just, you know, talking about the issues of the time. But all in all, I actually got a little family time in, which was really nice. And we're in the middle of building our set at our new studio for The High Wire, which is taking a lot of focus right now. And we're really excited how everything's coming together. But ultimately, this is one of the few weekends I'm going to be at home. So I tried to enjoy it. You know, I think, as you know, the month of October is going to be really crazy. I'm doing a lot of traveling.
Are you really?
Yeah. I mean, this weekend coming up on the 3rd, we're having a big freedom rally in Austin. So I'll be at that along with an amazing group of speakers, including Simone Gold, who I haven't met yet.
Wow. Tell people
really
about
excited
that.
Tell
people so they can come. Tell people about that, what that's about.
Yeah. So we're going to be marching on the Capitol here in Austin, speaking about freedom, health freedom, but all of the freedoms that we see, you know, being impinged upon. I mean, this pandemic is taking away everything from, you know, the use of our change in dollars to tracking our cell phones. I mean, it's being used, I think, as an excuse to rob us of so many of the freedoms we've known for so long. Freedom of speech, of course. You know, I've been censored. My YouTube channel is shut down. Any second, we'll probably lose Facebook. There's a lot of concern right now around October 1st. There's a discussion that there's going to be a large purge on Facebook on October 1st. They're claiming they're going to get rid of any sites that they think spread dangerous information, and so that would be any information that goes against the world order, I suppose, which, you know, so often these social media platforms quote the WHO. Well, that's not information by the WHO. And, you know, my wife Lee made a really interesting point even about masks and things. She said, look, I'm in alignment with the President of the United States, Dr. Scott Atlas, who is his advisor what else do I need to be compliant in this country? If our, you know, if I'm aligned with the president, then I should be allowed to walk the streets the way the president is. And I think that there's something to that concept. So the idea that if we are celebrating idea, you know, the sort of the philosophy or the medical understanding coming from Dr. Scott Atlas and Donald Trump, you know, our president, then how is it we are going against Facebook guidelines? Like, since when have we ever heard that being aligned with the leader of our nation, that we are somehow opposed to the truth? And of course, they quote the World Health Organization, which to me is not a government. That's not a U.S. government agency. That's an international agency. In fact, it's a foreign agency. And I think that those that have aligned with that foreign agency, whether it's Bill Gates or, you know, Facebook or YouTube, these are, you know, we live in the United States of America. And so if you are siding with foreign agents against the truth that would help America through this pandemic, get us into a place where we can save our economy and get back to being the world leader we have, you know, grown so accustomed to being. If they're against that, I believe that there should be trials and investigations into the possibility of treason going on. I think that Bill Gates and Tony Fauci have worked with foreign agencies when we look at the World Health Organization. Even Gavi, these are not government, they're not U.S. government agencies. This isn't the CDC. I mean, look, I have my own issues with the CDC and the FDA, but at least if you were saying CDC and FDA are what are driving our thoughts, those are government agencies in America. When you say the WHO, you're now referencing a foreign agency in my mind, and I have no respect for foreign agencies when it comes to dictating what we do here in the United States of America. But anyway, back to a great march start. It's going to be all day in Austin, Texas. Simone Gold, of course, Dr. Simone Gold, who was the leader that put together the frontline doctors summit in front of the Supreme Court. What was that, 2 months ago? Seems like yesterday, when they stood out in front of the Supreme Court, celebrated their use of hydroxychloroquine, how much success they were having with their patients, saying things like, you know, we have a treatment now, this pandemic is over, you know, we've got to send our children back to school and get this country back on track. Of course, that had 17 million views on Breitbart just in a few hours. I think 6 hours it got 17 million views. And then YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter all shut down the video feed. I'm calling it one of the greatest moments of censorship in U.S. history. I've never seen anything like that. And such a concerted effort from multiple social media platforms to take down that information. These are, you know, licensed, practicing doctors in the United States of America giving firsthand accounts of their experience in the hospitals and the ERs they were working in. That, to me, trumps a Fauci who hasn't seen a patient in 50 years. You know, there's a difference between a bureaucrat and a doctor. And we are dealing with a situation and, you know, that the frontline doctors understand what's taking place. When we override those doctors and let bureaucrats get involved, sorry about that. Dogs, obviously, something they're barking at. Then we are really in trouble. And so that was a really incredible moment that Dr. Simone Gold put together. I think she's a hero. My understanding is that she actually lost her position at the hospital she was at because of...
Within 2 days.
Yeah, making that statement. Incredible that doctors are not free to express their own experience, their personal experience when treating an illness. And to me, this really shows us that the dream has failed. The dream of what social media, what YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, you know, what we were sold on was this idea that it was going to interconnect the world. The world was going to be able to come together and that great ideas would move quicker because around the world it would be like we're neighbors, we're family working together. Well, here we have a pandemic that the lead scientists that are driving the decision-making on the lockdowns keep telling you they know nothing about this virus. They don't understand it. Every day they're changing the statement they made last week. Anyone that thinks that Dr. Fauci is a hero, I said, name one thing he said that was true for 2 whole weeks. I've never seen anyone fail harder for longer.
Or 20 years.
Yeah, but I mean, really, specifically to this, he has been an absolute disaster on this. And so you had a moment where doctors from around the world, you know, could be speaking to each other from their own experiences, whether it's Africa or England or Australia and America. This is what Facebook and YouTube were supposed to be a forum where the world could come together and say, here's our experience on the front lines. We're using hydroxychloroquine. It's not working when we give it too late, when they're on their deathbed. But if you give it at the moment that they're diagnosed, especially those that are in that high-risk category, over the age of 65, suffering comorbidities like COPD, heart disease, diabetes, you know, when we're giving it at the moment of diagnosis and we nip this in the bud, hydroxychloroquine with zinc and azithromycin is just an incredibly successful tool. The world should have said, great, France, you could have had Didier Raoult hop on Facebook and say, you know, I wasn't using zinc. I was using azithromycin and a little bit larger dose of hydroxychloroquine. Let me try adding in the zinc. And then maybe someone from Japan says, hey, we're having a lot of success here with intravenous vitamin C. That was what was supposed to happen. Instead, every one of those voices is being censored and shut down so they can't have that conversation, so that we're stuck with the opinion and ideas of agenda-driven, you know, bureaucrats that clearly have a different agenda. And to speak to that agenda, I think the moment you heard Tony Fauci, you know, say that he didn't believe there were going to be treatments, when we hear real doctors say the only way out of this is going to be a vaccine, really? When did you become a psychic? When did you suddenly, you know, recognize that you knew what treatment was going to be the most successful, the fastest? That's, there's nothing in that that makes sense. We should, it's just as likely that we'll have a treatment that wipes this out, that we'd have a vaccine. In fact, more likely, given the history of this vaccine and the attempt at it for 20 years, whether it's the coronavirus itself, every vaccine has failed for 20 years. It's destroyed God knows how many animals in animal trials. It's one of the most dangerous vaccines ever attempted. But also, when you think of, you know, the approach, the mRNA approach that Moderna is using, or the adenovirus vector approach with an inserted gene, all of these things have failed. These approaches have gotten people killed. There is, you know, none of this has ever seen success. So what makes Tony Fauci suddenly a visionary seer that essentially something that's as difficult as a cure for cancer, oh, we're going to just get it and it's going to be a vaccine. To me, that says that there was always just an agenda for a vaccine. They're not being realistic about how difficult that is.
You, that's so great, Dell, and you're so right. You know that since the beginning, since February, I was saying this is a big fat nothing burger virus.
Yep.
And this is all, you know, it's like, look over there, virus, and social engineering and all that stuff. When what was really happening was power and control. You know, I want to change gears just a bit because I was reading this article this weekend. It's called, the name of the article was, the fallacious argument, if masks don't work, then why do surgeons wear them? And the author of that article is Dr. Jim Meehan from Tulsa, Oklahoma, who's one of the group of physicians who's filed a class action lawsuit against the state of Oklahoma about masks and about the fact that that the masks don't work. They only harm people. And I actually had a whole conversation with him last night. He's going to come and do an Instagram live with me about, because he wrote this thing. He's testifying in Connecticut this morning against masks. Right. They're testifying. They're doing this whole thing from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And in fact, one of the gals who was one of the writers of that lawsuit contacted me. And I'm going to have the opportunity tonight to be on a Zoom with 39,000 physicians about masks, about the COVID, about social distancing and the depression, anxiety, and suicide that's causing many more deaths than this virus ever will, about educating them about what's coming down the pike on this vaccine. So suddenly, through the power of God, I think that God's hearing our prayers, man, and hearing all the work that you've done and I've done and Bobby's done and, you know, Rashid and those of us that just pound it out every day. It's like death by a thousand cuts, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every single day, you know, I just keep saying it in the things that I write and the things that I do, and I know you do on the high wire all the time. I just feel like all of us have our collective sledgehammers that we're just pounding away at this beast from all these different directions. And even though we're all on the same team and we're all heading in the same direction about freedom, medical freedom, freedom of choice, stopping censorship, stopping mandates and all this other stuff. Yeah. We're all standing. I just think of it as like a great big Trojan horse. It's like concrete. And we're all standing on different sides of this horse all the way around with our sledgehammers, just pounding on it. And so the mask thing, and so is really, really a big deal. And I decided, I don't know, maybe 2 months ago now, it seems like 2 years, this stuff has been, it seems like it's been going on forever, that I wanted to change directions, at least temporarily, and really put all my effort into stopping these mask mandates. Because I keep saying that the only thing that masks do is cause illness to the person who's wearing it. And more and more and more evidence is coming out about that. And, you know, when we were talking to Jim, when I was talking with Jim Meehan last night about that article that he wrote, and he sent me a treasure trove of all these articles that he's pulled from the from peer-reviewed literature showing that masks don't work. They don't even do anything in a surgical suite. I mean, they could practice, they could do surgery without them, and it really wouldn't matter. You know, right. And so it's this whole this visual thing that we have about these masks. And so because I said, if we can't get people to understand that the mask is separating us, it's social conditioning, it does nothing, it doesn't protect you. I can't wear it to protect you and I can't wear it to protect me. It really does nothing. If we can't get people to understand that, then it's going to be really hard to get those people who are marching like sheep to line up to get the vaccine. So I know that you've talked a lot about the mask stuff.
Yeah.
So tell me what you guys, because you've talked to a lot of people, lot of people on Highwire about the mask stuff.
Well, you know, and I'm glad we're having this conversation because I've gone both directions. You know, at first I was against masks. To me, it's just a placeholder for the vaccinations. But then, you know, I had several people inside and some really big sources and people close to me saying, Del, why are you fighting masks? People are fine with the masks. It's not a big deal. This isn't the hill to die on. And so I sort of let it go for a while and said, all right, I mean, there's a point to that. I don't like wearing it, but certainly this is not the biggest issue. The biggest issue is going to be vaccination. But about, I would say for me, about 2-3 weeks ago, when Paul Offit and Tony Fauci started reporting that even when we have the vaccine, it's going to be such a dud, essentially, that you're still going to have to wear masks. I said, all right, that's it. That's it. Then you're going to have us wearing masks to the end of time, and I am over it. And so I'm reevaluating that position, you know. And to be honest, you're absolutely right. I mean, I won't put the thing on my kids. And I have had there's 4 children around my daughter who's 6 years old that have all gotten strep on their face, you know, or a bacteria infection on the face. You see that once every 10 years, maybe on one kid. And now all these kids are getting these infections from wearing the mask and rubbing the strep virus, you know, into their
face. You know what I tell people, Del, and I think this is a great visual that people have to understand about masks. And when you read the medical literature, now you've got lawsuits, doctors filing lawsuits about the mask. We've got a mask lawsuit going on here in Ohio. We've got a lawsuit going on here about the entire fraud of everything. I keep telling people, the cloth mask, you know, he says in his article, Jimmy Hans says in his article, he talks about masks in the surgical suite and how a surgeon, you know, they scrub and then they put on a clean mask. And if it's a long surgery, that's more than an hour, they will break scrub, go out, re-scrub, and put on a clean mask because the wetness does nothing but collects the viruses and bacteria in their mouth. And I keep telling, I want people to get this visual because it's so true. And particularly the cloth mask, that those really tight black masks that you see everybody wearing all the time.
Yeah.
The cloth mask with just from breathing on them, within less than 20 minutes, they start to have moisture. It's like spitting on your face all day long. And I want people to get that. It's like spitting on your face. I mean, would you spit on your hands and rub it on your face? Not in a million years. But you do it all day long with these masks. You're spitting on your face. And people don't change them. They don't wash them. They don't, even the surgical masks, they don't change them. You see them wear them in their pockets, wear them in their, stick it on the dashboard of their car. And they put all this stuff on their face. And so this, so I'm so glad to hear you say that you are reevaluating that position because to me, it's when you've got a mask, it, you know, they tried to separate us between vaccinated and unvaccinated, but you could lie. You could say, oh, my kids are vaccinated when they're not.
Right.
But the mask is social conditioning and social separating on who's going to be obedient, which means you just do it because you're told to, or compliant, which means I don't believe in this stuff and I know it's bad, but I'm doing it anyways. And we're separating society into buckets of who's going to be obedient, who's going to obey and who's not.
Well, people, and I, you know, what people don't realize about the mask when it comes, and first of all, you know, 99% of the science around masks comes from the use of masks in hospitals. We don't have any decent, really robust science looking at regular people wearing masks in a population, you know, walking through their lives. And even if they did that study, you had people that were wearing the masks in a trained way where they're not touching their face, where it's air sealed, walking to society, which is not what we're seeing from 99.9% of the population. But I've scrubbed into ORs. I've shot hundreds and hundreds of surgeries working on the doctor's television show at CBS. And, you know, I've done the whole thing. You know, I had to scrub in the gloves, the mask, and everything in order to be in the OR with a camera. I had to swab down my camera, make sure that it was all clean when I went in there. But people don't realize that really the mask in surgery is a tissue. What it is a tissue so that when the doctor's standing over that, you know, the cavern that's being created in whatever surgery they're doing, they may drool. You even know when you're looking down that long and breathing and you're intense, your nose tends to run. It's just a tissue there to catch, you know, that mucus coming out of your face so that it doesn't drip into the body. It is not there to stop airflow or bacteria from going. And that's because you can't have the doctor touching their nose or rubbing their nose, which they would be doing. You can't have a tissue because as soon as their rubber gloves touch something like that, they'd be contaminated. So they put the tissue right around their face. This has never been designed to stop, you know, little virons, tiny little particles. That's made clear even in California during these fires. You see the reports. Your mask doesn't stop the smoke particles that are coming in the forest fire. If it can't stop a smoke particle, it is certainly not going to stop a viral particle, which is so much smaller. So all of those things are really obvious to me. And it's funny, I was at a bar. It was Lee's birthday this weekend. And so we went out Friday night with a bunch of people. And there's this great, in Austin, they do a great thing with these outdoor farms that just have a distillery and they make barbecue. And so there was a kid, it was basically an outdoor bar, and he's got the mask on. I could tell he was really nervous. I said, "Sir, can you wear your mask?" I said, "Actually, no, I'm not going to wear a mask." And he looked freaked out. I said, "Look, I just want you to, you know, I want you to think about one thing because you're going to see a lot of people tonight." And I said, "Look at this line. Look how many people are touching their mask, okay? Now, do you see me touching my face? I'm not touching my face because there's nothing itching my face. I'm not wearing a mask. So I want you to think about you're about 3 feet away from me. Everyone touching their mask right now in that line and in front of you all night long, they're getting whatever virus or collection of things you're trying to avoid on their hands. Now they're touching the wood. They're touching the check you just handed, the pen you just handed me. And that bacteria and, you know, or viruses, whatever your word is, crawling across this little piece of wood between you and I right now. It's crawling up your computer. It's all over you. You know, are you more concerned about me breathing the air moving past the mask? You see the gaps in their mask? None of this is doing anything. If anything, the touching and placing it on the things that you're touching is putting you in more danger. I'm convinced when I look at the population and how they're wearing masks, you know, I'd love to shoot. I mean, I keep trying to think of how I could tastefully shoot a commercial that essentially shows a bunch of, you know, people walking towards a grocery store and they all put on underwear as they walk into the store and then they're grabbing the fruit and the vegetables or whatever and then they leave the store and they take their underwear off and they hang it on the mirror over the car and then they get out of the bank and they put their underwear back on and then they take it off. I mean, if you watch people doing that all day, you'd be like, you wouldn't want to touch a single thing on this planet. And that's exactly what we're doing. People don't recognize that you are discarding the same, you know, like toxins from every, just the way you do in the other orifices of your body. These toxins are collecting. This is a pair of underwear. So when you're touching it, would you ever want to watch someone touch their underwear and then touch the doorknob or the grapefruit you're about to buy at the grocery store? No. So to me, this, and they knew this, right? Every single one of these scientists told us at the beginning of this pandemic, don't wear a mask. It's more likely to spread the illness than to stop it. Now, all of a sudden, the whole thing's changed because, as you and I know, this has nothing to do with health. This is about social conditioning and control of
social engineering.
Yeah, that's it.
So Del, so I'm so glad to hear you say that you're changing your position on that, because I did an interview 2 weeks ago with John Mappin from Camelot TV, and he had interviewed someone who had said, if we could get the 51% of people to just stop wearing the mask for 2 days, it would all be over, all of it. Mm. Number one, the people who are so bought the Kool-Aid and into the fear would realize they're not going to die. And the second thing is that the powers that be would understand that the hypnotic trance has been broken. And that's also what this mask thing is. And that's what people who are going to be running to the vaccine, if they think that their life is going to change and get back to normal as soon as they're vaccinated, guess again. Yeah. That is just the beginning of the terror that's going to happen. So on some of your guests that you've had on Highwire talking about the vaccine, what sort of things have you heard? I mean, I did an interview last week with Rocco Galati, you know, the attorney out of
Canada. Yeah, he's fantastic.
Who's been suing the pants off of everybody. And he said some things to me that in that interview that I had no idea about, like, for one thing, about that, you know, the whole depopulation agenda is alive and well, and that they anticipate over the next 15 years, 4 to 5 billion people, that's people on the planet being unemployed. So they have to get them, corral them and get everybody into this social conditioning and get them under control and get them chipped with the hydrogel and all this other stuff, because they can't have 4 billion people running around trying to figure out how to revolt. And that was the thing and he said that they've spent in the $21 trillion that they've spent so far in this. He said, let me put that in perspective for you. He said, that's the equivalent of $500,000 per hour since Christ walked on the planet.
Wow.
So $500,000 per hour times 2,000 years is how much $21 trillion are. When you think about all the money to be made from this vaccine and the tracking and the COVID-19 passes and all the stuff they're going to do with us in terms of the tracking and hiring people, it's many trillions of dollars more than that. So that was kind of a shocking revelation to me about the powers and about the control. From some of your guests that you've had on Highwire, share with there's thousands of people on here right now. Tell the people anything that you've heard about the upcoming of this vaccine that really kind of went, wow, I didn't know that.
Well, you know, obviously from the very beginning, we have been really covering, you know, we immediately looked into the history of this vaccine, the attempts in animal trials. I think the biggest wows are actually coming from the pro-vaccine side. You know, Paul Offit and Peter Hotez talking about immune enhancement, discussing, you know, how dangerous the adenovirus vaccine. That was something that came up last week. You know, you've got Paul Offit admitting that, you know, you had Jesse Gelsinger, who died from an adenovirus approach to gene therapy back in the 90s. And, you know, which was signed off on by... and I'm forgetting the guy's name. But anyway, just this idea that they know how dangerous these approaches are. I mean, I think that that's what's really fascinating about the vaccine. When they started admitting that the FDA had to change its philosophy and say, we'll accept a 50% effective vaccine, 50% effective. You know, our immune systems in the world right now are 99.74% effective at beating this virus. So why would we inject ourselves with a dangerous vaccine that killed animals in the animal trials in order to achieve a 50% effectiveness? And then you've got Paul Offit saying, well, it may not actually stop transmission, but it could reduce symptoms. Reduce symptoms? We're talking about an illness that you have to take a test in order to know you even have it. You know what I mean? So that's like zero symptoms. I mean, we've never heard more about asymptomatic in our entire lives all around the world. Nobody knows they have this virus. So you want to tell me how you reduce symptoms below zero? And then you look at Moderna, you know, you look at Moderna and 2/3 of the people are saying they're getting fever symptoms. They're getting sick. So the vaccine clearly worsened, you know, your symptoms are worse because for most of us, 90% of us, you don't even know you have it. So to me, even more than the specialists that are coming out pointing out these things, it's what we're hearing from the vaccine makers, from the pro-vaxxers themselves, that I find really interesting. But Sukrit Bhakti came on to my show. Dr. Sukrit Bhakti, world-renowned virologist, scientist, epidemiologist out of Germany. who's been working to try and get Germany, and they've had a huge revolt from their scientific body in Germany against the government's lockdowns. But he said something that really was something I had not cued in on. What he said is we're all being told that somehow we are heartless because we don't care about that quarter of 1% that are on their deathbeds that are getting this cold virus. He referred to it as a cold virus. It is a cold virus, and they are passing away. He said, yet we do not talk about all of them. First of all, hundreds of thousands of people are going to die this year, whether it's heart disease or cancer. 650,000 people die every year from heart disease in the United States of America. Those 650,000 people are dying all alone in hospitals. They're dying in nursing homes all alone. At the last moment in your life, one of the most precious moments, I think, is when we're born into this world and the people hold us as we're carried into this world. And as we're carried out of this world, those that stand around us and hold us. You want to talk about heartless. We are robbing this generation of people that are dying right now in hospitals this year of that last moment to be with their families, to pray with their families, to be hugged and held and kissed. They are dying the most lonely, horrific death there has ever been. That is truly heartless, and that's happening to millions and millions of people around the world. This virus is killing people that always die from viruses that are this weak, and that is simply the fact of the matter. And I think, you know, when we look at how they're counting the numbers, this is a counting game, right? It's a hoax based on counting. We have always had people die of coronavirus that had COPD, heart disease, diabetes. We've always had people die of the flu. And when I see, you know, New York Times or articles that say conspiracy theorists, you know, point to the 6% of those that died without any comorbidities as though COVID only kills 6%, that's a conspiracy theory. Those other 94% matter too. Okay, fine, but is this a conspiracy theory? We have never counted infectious illnesses and deaths the way we have. Is it not true that most of the people in that comorbidity category would have been listed as complications from cancer, complications from heart disease, complications from COPD? What is the complication? Your body is so weak that you cannot fight a cold virus. That's what's happening. And so if we look back, Sherry, and started counting flu deaths over last year, and made everybody that had cancer, stage 4 cancer, or had a heart attack and found themselves in a hospital, and we said if they had the flu, they died of the flu, you would find out that flu kills 300,000 to 500,000 people a year. I'm sure of it. And so we're making false comparisons. And that is the lie of our time. That is the lie of this pandemic. And so I've had tons of scientists that come on and talk about it. I think that probably the most fascinating interview I did was with Dr. Friston, who's one of the leading brain authorities, brain scientists in the world. He took his brain mapping software that is said to be the most critical advancement in the investigation of the brain in our lifetime. And so Carl Friston was his name, and he took that same mapping software and said, look, I just started looking at brain cells as people, that the messaging, you know, that the firing of the information in the brain that I've been tracking as the virus itself, and then the connection to other people. And so he said, I mapped the world like I mapped the brain. And he was one of the first ones that reported on our show, I am seeing that 60 to 80% of the population cannot get this virus. He said, when we look at it, we look at how it's spreading, we are seeing these giant pockets of people that are not getting infected. And he said there's several theories to why they're not getting infected, whether it's, you know, the distance, just a geographic setup of where they are in the world. But there must also be some form of cross-reactive immunity that exists, because the computer is clearly showing us in every country around the world, this model was showing that 60 to 80% cannot be infected. That, to me, was the biggest discovery of this entire thing. And to you and I, in many ways, it's not that shocking, you know, to find out that only 20% are going to need to get this virus in order to reach immunity. In fact, this is an argument that happened just this week at one of the press conferences at the White House, where Scott Atlas was challenged, saying, you know, they were saying, well, Dr. Redfield, the CDC, says that only 9% have been affected. And he said, look, there's cross-reactive T-cell immunity, there's cellular immunity, Th2 immunity, antibodies, which everyone is talking about, is only a tiny fraction of what the immunity actually represents. Tony Fauci got into it with Rand Paul, who brought up the same issue. And thank God, I mean, for you and I to watch Rand Paul's and Scott Atlas is now finally standing in front of cameras talking about what we always knew. But Rand Paul said there's clearly cross-reactive immunity. And Tony Fauci said, you find me a scientist basically that agrees that you only need 20% immunity. Like, that's just not scientifically accurate. And I was thinking, what are you talking about? Every flu season, we know that it's about 20% of people that get the flu before we reach herd immunity because of all the people that had the flu last year. And this, you know, the coronavirus is just another coronavirus. If you had one last year, odds are you are protected this year. And so it's amazing to watch a Tony Fauci or the World Health Organization or Bill Gates try to fight the historical reference of literally all science since the dawn of man until last year and say that none of that exists now. It's like they're trying to rewrite a new history of viral understanding and bacteria understanding, but it's not happening. And
and writing a new history that goes with that asymptomatic carrier concept that they came up with. It's like, where did that come from? And there's two things I want to address, make a comment about what you said. One is about people dying without their loved ones. You know, my nurse practitioner in my office said this last week, and I thought it was so correct. I said, Autumn, write that down so I remember it. She said nursing homes, hospitals, and I would add veterinarian clinics are the concentration camps of this present day Holocaust.
Yeah.
Because people are there dying alone. I mean, people with Alzheimer's that are confused. They don't have any idea. The autistic kids that they're supposed to be wearing these masks, they don't have any idea. I mean, the nursing homes, hospitals, that you can't even get an elective procedure without getting your DNA harvested in a COVID test that means nothing and that cases that mean nothing. And now, you know, these veterinarian clinics that you have to drop your animal off when they're sick, that they're, if they keep them overnight or they're going to do some sort of procedure, the veterinarian's even going to just do an exam on them. You got to wait in your car, drop your animal off, your loved one that's, you know, the external manifestation of you, like your children in many people's lives.
Yes.
And not be with them when they're sick or they're having a procedure or there's something wrong with them. So nursing homes, hospitals, veterinarian clinics, yeah, I'm calling you out,
yeah,
are the concentration camps of this present day Holocaust. And then I would say something sort of from a kind of a smart ass sort of perspective, but I think it's true. this virus, this SARS-CoV-2 virus, is absolutely the smartest virus that they've ever created or has ever happened. I mean, it can tell time. It knows if after 10 o'clock, before 10 o'clock, no problem. You know, you can't get sick, but after 10 o'clock, I'm coming after you. I'm coming to get you. It can tell height. I mean, when you walk into a restaurant, you have to wear a mask because you're infectious. But when you're sitting down at the table, no problem. It goes right over your head. It doesn't bother you. It can tell distance. I mean, it comes out of your mouth and goes exactly 6 feet and drops to the floor.
Right.
Can tell the length of how far it is. It's so smart. And I hope that people understand how ridiculous that is. And because that's what they're trying to make you believe. This virus, you know, if you wear a mask, it protects people. It protects you and protects others. It only goes 6 feet. It tells time. It knows how high it is. I mean, you can walk into a restaurant, wear a mask, sit down at your table, not have to have it on.
Yeah. Yeah.
On an airplane, you know, when you're eating, it doesn't really matter.
Sure.
You know, United
Airlines.
Oh, wait,
you're eating. Let's leave them alone.
Let's leave them alone. United Airlines and all these airlines. In fact, we were on a big phone call. It was me and Rocco and Tom Rentz and Rashid Buttar, yeah, Judy Mikovits, and me and Carrie Madej. And we were on a conference call the other day talking legal strategies. And I know that that you've been involved with a lot of legal strategy things with Aaron Seary and with Bobby Kennedy and different people like that. Because you know, talking about legal strategies on how to get this whole thing to stop. Because honestly, it's the only way. When we start suing governors outside of their domain and outside of their capacity, that's really, really important. And so there's three big lawsuits going on in Ohio, because we understand that all of this is fraud. All of it is fraud. Yeah. And now, you know, we've been pounding away at it loud enough and broad enough and big enough over the last 7 months that I think that their story's starting to just crumble.
Yeah.
But yet somehow mainstream media, the people still get their news from CNN, you know, are bought into this fear-based place. What would you say, because we're going to be winding up here on time, because, you know, unlike Facebook, Instagram cuts you off in an hour. I mean, they just make you go dead. Is what would you say in terms of getting people out of their fear-based place and getting back into health and medical freedom? What would, because Del, everything you say is so inspiring. It's just so inspiring. When I've heard you at rallies and you know, we've been friends and colleagues for, you know, since you started here, pretty much. I was one of your first guests or very one of your early guests. That's when you went to California. What would you say in ending up here? And thank you so much. And if you've got like a couple of minutes after we end here, I would like, can you call me back? Because I got a couple things I want to drop on your plate before we start our days. But what would you say in terms of inspiring people to get out of their fear-based place, to get active, to understand what's going on? What do you want to leave us with here for the day?
Well, I mean, the thing is you really need to start taking time away from your television set as much as possible. I think that if you want to find health, then you've got to stop watching television. Have you seen the meme that, you know, the Amish aren't seeing any COVID-19 deaths? And they said, why? And the Amish say, because we don't have a television set. I mean, that's really what this is, you know, it's sort of what this has turned into. People, you know, one of the things that I try to get across, you know, you're a doctor, I'm just a journalist. And so I can only come at this from the things that I know, both about media and the people that I interview. But the thing that I can bring to this is you have to understand that when you work in television, I wish these dogs were, sorry, they're being so loud today.
That's okay.
you know, when you work in television, you know for a fact that the entertainment, the programming that you're spending your life creating is really just there to hold people's attention to what is actually a billboard. This is a billboard for the advertisers, and the entertainment is only there to keep people looking at the billboard. That's what we know for a fact when you work in television. That billboard now is 70% of it is owned by the pharmaceutical institutions. And so when you are watching that TV, you are being programmed by those commercials. They are using every technique. Hold on one second. Let me just put the dogs up. Come on, guys.
No problem. Oh, I get that same problem as he does sometimes. My little dog is, you know, only he's just gained some weight. Oh my gosh, he's gone from 10 pounds to 12 pounds. So I have a friend staying with me that feeds him all the time. But he's a little dog, but he sounds
Happens. this never happens at my studio. You know? You know, I think about my own family. You know, my parents didn't vaccinate me, but, you know, in many ways they are really buying into this world, and, you know, they're caught up in it, you know, and not to really out my family, but just to see that even natural health people, they think that they can overcome. That, you know, they marched in the 60s for freedom of thought. They think they can overcome, you know, the television set, the MSNBC and the CNN. And then, oh, no, I'm on top of it. But everybody, what I'm trying to say is anybody that watches that long enough, you're being brainwashed. You cannot avoid it. You can't have the repetition of fear so constant that you can override it. We are not designed to override that. In the end, whatever you hear, you know, repeated the most times is what you end up sort of taking into yourself. And that television is constantly telling you you're sick. It is constantly telling you cannot live on this planet without pharma. And so you can enjoy, and even in the programming now, even in the shows you're watching, funding is going into, this is the modern age of television. More and more advertisers are putting their products and product placement inside of the television show you're watching. You know, I've been looking at this even when it comes to, you know, television shows like, was the last Kiefer Sutherland show where he's like president of the United States, or Homeland. These shows that I watch, And one of the things I've noticed is they keep making the bad guy some internal journalist or somebody in America that uses language like, you know, our founding fathers said and our constitutional rights are. That programming, these shows are making people, when they hear discussions about George Washington or the Constitution of the United States, that that is a bad guy. That's how you know someone is dangerous to this country. That is the programming coming out of television. And this is brand new to me, Sherry, because, I mean, as many know, you know, I'm sort of politically maroon now, having been a progressive liberal. But I worked in Hollywood. And when they would say liberal Hollywood, I was like, what are they talking about? Now I'm really starting to see it. They are programming us through constant affirmation that someone who believes in the Constitution of the United States of America is a bad person. They are a domestic terrorist, even. That's how you know they're a domestic terrorist. They'll say things like Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and First Amendment or Second Amendment. All of that is what that television is doing. And so if there's one message I can put forward, it's turn the TV off. Why don't you start talking? Why don't we get back to having conversations with each other? Why don't we get back to the true entertainment, the mind expansion that happens by putting ideas on the table and debating them with people that we love? We've got to get away from this idea that, you know, the politically correctness, right? Don't bring up religion. Don't bring up God. Don't bring up politics. You know, don't bring up, you know, science and medicine at the table. That's just going to make for uncomfortable conversations. That's why we're in the position we are. That's why we're wearing masks and hating it. That's why we're watching ourselves being compromised in what we believe in, is because we stop speaking, we stop communicating, and we let the television control our society and the government and the industries that want to sell us products. They are the ones in control. We've got to get back to communicating. And I, you know, even back before I'd really become politically marooned, I had a cousin that was very conservative. And one day I sat down with him and said, look, we disagree on our politics, but let's put the politicians aside for the moment. I'm curious, what do you really think of war in the Middle East? He says, well, I think that it only makes the rich richer. I don't think it has anything to do with our oil consumption in America. I was like, I totally agree. I said, what do you think? And I just went through a list of all the things, like, what is it you care about? And every once in a while, one of us will say, well, Biden or Obama is the reason. I said, no, let's take that out. Let's take who out of it. I just want to know what you actually believe. Should we be at wars in the Middle East? Should we have a forced vaccination? If we got back to those conversations, you would recognize that Americans all across this country, we agree on 90% of what's wrong in this country. What we're arguing about is who is the problem, who's causing it. And that's the news. That's where the news comes in. They're dividing us. They're making us point fingers at each other and at other people because they don't ever want us to sit down and actually have a conversation. Because when we do, we realize, wait a minute, we really are all in this together. We, the people, know what's right here. We are being distracted and made to yell and scream at each other instead of have conversations. That's the message I would really like to leave. We are not going to fix this if we stop talking to each other. We have got to get over that discomfort, start sparking up a conversation with everybody else with a mask. I mean, I get it. I'm at Whole Foods. I got to wear it. But you see, there's something we see in each other's eyes. Like, yeah, this is... And then, you know, someone will say, yeah, it's bull crap. And I say, yeah, totally. Or Jimmy and I, a lot of times when we travel around anywhere, we cannot have it. We were in a hotel, you know, back in Wichita, Kansas. And we got on the elevator. We weren't wearing masks. We refused to wear a mask in the hotel. And the guy in the elevator looks at us and he tears his mask off. He's like, good, you're not wearing masks. He's like, I hate this stupid thing. And, you know, and Jimmy goes, freedom elevator. And the guy, you know, he's an older guy. He's like, freedom elevator. You know.
That's awesome.
It was really awesome, and we've got to take those opportunities where we can, but we certainly have to have the conversation, even if it's through masks. Let's at least start declaring to the other people, this is ridiculous. And by the way, I can feel the air blowing past my eyeballs and out the sides of my mouth, and this mask, there's no way it's doing anything. The conversation needs to happen. We need to get back to the dinner table. We need to get back to the phone calls.
Amen.
We've got social media. We need to tell the truth in our blogs and in our posts to each other. Do not be afraid. Our founding fathers were not afraid to say the word freedom. They were not afraid to speak out against the British government, even when there were soldiers knocking down their doors and sleeping in their beds because they had that right. We have freedom because our founding fathers were not afraid to speak that word. We need to get back to speaking our truth and speaking our word. Remember the Declaration of Independence. Go look at how many people signed that. That's all it took to create the greatest nation in the world. Your voice matters. Only a few passionate people is what it's going to take to get us back on track and save our freedom, especially our health freedom. We're needed now. We were chose to be here now. Stop being depressed. Look at the energy. Look at the movement. Sherry, we've gone from 7 out of 10 people. I just saw a headline back on June 10th. It was like New York Times. 7 out of 10 people will get the COVID-19 vaccine when it's ready. Now, beginning of August, headline reads, 2/3 of America won't get. So that seven out of 10 won't get the vaccine at the moment it's ready. That means people are waking up. Even behind those masks, wherever they are out there in this country, we are waking up. That's because we are talking more and more. Don't stop talking. Speak your truth and continue to share pieces like this, right? Take this video between Sherry and I and share it with everyone you know. Take the High Wire episodes. We're breaking them down to little 5-minute segments too, if that's what you want to share. But that's something you can do. You're a newspaper reporter. You are helping get that. It's the Underground Railroad, right? Share it with everyone you know so that we can expand the understanding to the people that are glued in front of their television sets watching CNN and MSNBC. Maybe we can penetrate. We certainly are moving in the right direction. I'm very excited about that.
Woo-hoo. Yes. Yes. You know, that was awesome. We're going to take that last little piece of what you just said. We're going to clip that out because I download these off of Instagram and we convert them and we actually multi-purpose all this content. So Dal, so just so we don't get cut off, I do want to talk to you for just a minute if you'll call me right back.
Okay, I'll call you right back.
Okay. But thank you everybody for being here this morning. And Dell's right. This will be up on Instagram. You know, it'll be over on disseminate.tv. We're going to share it everywhere in our email list. Thank you so much for taking your time to talk with all of us this morning and inspiring all of us in one more direction besides the amazing stuff that you do on Highwire. So thank you everybody for being here this morning. We love all of you. We pray for you. You know, we thank you for supporting everything that we do. And until I see you at 6 o'clock tonight on Happy Hour with Dr. T, you guys have a really, really great day. Thank you so much, Dal, and thanks for being with us. Thanks to everybody for being here. You guys have a great day. Take care. Bye-bye.